11 o'clock hour here on a Monday. Coming up at noon, you're going to hear from Andy Reid exclusively on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. This is Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We'll get right back to the Chiefs in just a second, but I do want to pass along what is now confirmed news in the NFL. Giants head coach Brian Daboll made it official, saying the team is benching Daniel Jones, who actually become the team's number three quarterback, Tommy DeVito. Oh, yeah, him and his agent are back in the mix. Tommy DeVito will start. Local kid Drew Lock will be the backup.
Didn't they pay Drew Lock $5 million?
Yeah, and they're still starting Tommy DeVito, but I don't know if they're worried that Drew Lock will win them some games or what. If you're wondering,
I think it might just be fan sentiment. Like, if you're going to watch a Giants game, it's probably more fun. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The whole Tommy Cutlets thing. The other backdrop to this whole thing, much like a year or so ago when Russell Wilson got benched, when Derek Carr a few years ago got benched, there's injury guarantees that if Daniel Jones would have got hurt, then they would have had to owe him an X amount of money moving forward. So this ensures that he stays healthy. You're not allowed to officially do that. There's rules. And so the way you can do is say, based on performance, we're benching Daniel Jones, which, quite honestly, they got a strong case anyway. Just 20 months ago, Daniel Jones got a four-year, $160 million contract. Now he's out here getting benched. It's not obviously the same kind of money that Russell Wilson was making for it to be on that level, but it is another really, really bad contract. The Daniel Jones Giants era is over.
Who could have seen this coming when he signed that contract? Surely all of us thought that deal was going to go great, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're an optimist, yeah.
No, so Tommy, man. No one.
So that means while you're enjoying optimist. Thanksgiving with the family, you're eating some
Cooper Rush versus Tommy
some turkey, Giants, that's Cowboys, disgusting. 3 o'clock Fox game. I believe it's on Fox. Is going to be Tommy Cutlets and Cooper Rush. Hopefully, they at least give us Trey Lance.
That's where you turn the college basketball games on during that game.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Or
you talk about to your family.
You can do both. Usually course. It's background noise. I don't know about
that's
you.
50-50 for me.
Everybody's family eats at different times, I feel like, on Thanksgiving. I don't know about you. 3 o'clock seems like a great time to schedule the dinner.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just go ahead.
Right when the buffet line's coming through.
Go ahead and schedule the dinner. Maybe you normally eat at 1 o'clock. Maybe you push it back to three and you just eat during the Cowboys-Giants game on Thanksgiving. But let's get back to the Chiefs. I think we all know the history would tell us these teams are very likely to play, the Chiefs and Bills, that is, in the postseason
again.
I feel
like it's like a 90% chance. Anyone think it's less than that?
And right now, the way it's setting up seed-wise, 1 and 2, we'll see who's the one, who's the two. We'll get back into that conversation more tomorrow. But either way, if you're the 1 or 2, of course, you're not going to face each other until an AFC title game if both teams win. And so it looks like we'll get a rematch. Hopefully it's at Arrowhead again and not out at Highmark like it was last postseason or like it was yesterday. But if you're thinking about like what has to be better at the very, like the very top of the list, I think is going to be the pass rush. And that requires Charles Omenihue and Josh Uche becoming bigger factors. Omenihue, of course, is hurt. I understand. But like that to me is going to be crucial in the rematch against Buffalo. You could argue those are two things that are crucial against anybody. That's fair. But I think in a rematch, those are two things that would have to be better. We're going to talk about the left tackle during the Chiefs Red Half Hour some more because Kingsley was a healthy and active and everything. But I think at the top of the list, it is finding a way without blitzing that they have to get pressure on Allen. Otherwise, you're going to see a similar result.
So it's funny because like my initial reaction is blitz less because like the blitzing straight up did not work against Josh Allen. But also, that's how the Chiefs succeed. So I honestly don't think blitzing less is the answer. I would just say being more successful in your blitzes does. Like, you're just going to have to get home. Like, you want to know the way that they beat the Bills defensively? Get home on more of those blitzes. Spy Josh Allen more so he can't destroy you with the legs. And very simply, you run the ball more. You run the ball better. They didn't even run the ball that poorly, but they contained Josh Allen didn't, like, rip them apart. They contained the running game of James Cook, right? I know he had 2 rushing touchdowns, but they contained him. Amari Cooper didn't go nuclear on them. He had some nice catches against Najee Johnson. But like the simple answers are be like 5% better in the things that you were attempting. I actually don't. The one thing I will say that they'll have to be the next time that did stand out to me is I thought that this was one of their most vanilla games on offense of the entire year. There was almost nothing exotic in what they were doing offensively. And I don't know if that, I'm not saying that was with intention or they just thought their standard offense could take advantage of the Bills defense, But they're going to have to get more creative in how they
some of
get.
That was the man-to-man defense.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to get more creative the next time they face the Bills. That might be the thing that stands out to me the
That's
most.
Probably true. I don't know. We'll hear from Andy coming up at noon, and we'll talk with Dane and Hughes later in the week, someone that played, and get his perspective, obviously, from what he saw. He was in Buffalo on the call right here on 96.5 The Fan. But yeah, how much was that because of the man-to-man defense? Like, how much does that limit your ability to, you know, get them over leveraged to one side? We saw the second play of the game on I don't know what you would call it, double. It wasn't even a double reverse. Just like two fake handoffs. I don't even know.
It
what you
was
would call
the
like,
exact Texas it, long. You didn't it, watch it, on Saturday because you had the wedding.
Yeah,
the Longhorns ran that exact same spin around.
Who
play.
Copied off of who?
Reed copied off of Texas, the school.
I'm sure
ran
they've
it.
Seen that before.
Maybe, but they ran that exact play.
Yeah.
So
that's the only time where they kind of got them over. They used the leverage against Buffalo. And later on in the game, you didn't really see opportunities for them to take advantage of that. And I don't know if that had to do with some of the defense that the Bills were playing. I think a lot of times when a team loses their first game of the year, just so happens for the Chiefs, it's in November, not in September.
Yeah.
You know, you're always trying to search for answers. Sometimes you also have to tip your cap to Buffalo. They played really well yesterday. They of course did what they had to do, and they limited the Chiefs offensively. So much of this is different if, you know, you connect, you know, connect on a deep ball. I mean, maybe we add that to this list, which is the ongoing issue,
connect
which is
on
can they
pass.
Finally get the timing right and field awareness right between Mahomes and Xavier Worthy. That has to be better. Like if this team is to get back to a Super Bowl in three-peat, I will find it hard to believe that they're playing in New Orleans if you tell me that they don't connect in the playoffs on one deep pass with Worthy and Mahomes. Like if we're still talking and it's AFC title game weekend and they have not connected, I think there's a good chance they won't make it there. Like
they're going to have to start finding it soon.
Yeah. In the playoffs, in the playoffs is like, to me, it's still all these conversations that we're having today. Pass rush needs to be better. Are we concerned, to Drew's point, maybe about late game stuff, defensively, all that? The goal, of course, is it fixed or better by divisional round weekend? Because I hope they get the one seed, and I think they will. Divisional round weekend of the playoffs in January. That's ultimately all that matters. Not if it's week 18 against the Steelers, or week 17 against the Steelers, whatever the hell that is, 16.
What chance do you guys think it is, by the way, the Chiefs face the Bills in the postseason? Like, if you put a percentage to it, what would you say?
Well, given the fact
I think it's 90.
I think it's 75 or 80. It's one and two seeds will be one of them, I believe. And so that's the question. Does somebody drop down to a three seed somehow? And then all of a sudden you're playing earlier. But I think it would take an AFC championship game weekend. That's why I can't put it at 90, because it requires both teams still probably winning a playoff game to get there. But it's very high. Yeah, it's very, very high that these teams are going to play.
The only way it like lowers that for me is that if like they both become the two or the three and the Steelers are the one seed.
Mm.
Because all I'm really asking is one of them to win one game. And right now the 6-7 seeds are good teams, right? Like Denver's playing better. Colts are playing better-ish. But like the 7 seed doesn't really matter. So if you're the 2 seed, I think you're kind of getting a layup. If you're the 3 seed, 6 seed teams look like they could be salty.
Because what is
Chargers,
it? What is it?
Texans.
Let's talk about the rest of the AFC. Texans, like while we're doing this, something happened yesterday also for the first time. Just kind of one of those weird NFL stats. I think it was Jordan Schultz that pointed out it's the first NFL Sunday in which Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, and Patrick Mahomes all lost on the same day.
Oh, wow.
Just a weird NFL stat.
Oh, yeah.
But Burrow, it doesn't really mean anything. Burrow
probably just tells you how often they win more than anything else.
For sure. Or if they lose, they're playing each other in that given weekend.
I think the 6 seed is the Ravens now, isn't it?
That's what I was trying to get into with the AFC playoff picture. Because let's talk about what happened yesterday. Obviously, I just said it. Burrow and Lamar and Mahomes all lost. And so you're taking a look. I think in the AFC playoff picture right now, on November 18th, it's pretty clear 6 of the teams. I mean, the 7 seed is between Denver, Indy, and Miami, right? And this all stems from what happened on Sunday Night Football, where the Chargers were chargering after, I mean, they went full chargering after having a 21-point lead in the third quarter on Cincinnati. Cincinnati comes all the way back. Then the Bengals were bangling with some missed field goals and decision making. Ultimately, the Chargers win. The Chargers are making the playoffs.
They're 7-3.
They are making the playoffs.
I mean, it was taking. They're playing a last place schedule still. I mean, it would take an epic collapse for them.
So that's why I think we know the 6 teams. The obvious suspects: the Chiefs and the Steelers and the Bills and the Ravens and the Texans. I think the Chargers are an obvious team now as well.
I think so too.
It really is going to come down to Denver, Indy, and Miami. And the Broncos looked really, really good yesterday, of course.
I think the Chargers are probably too good for this schedule conversation, as in I don't think it's going to fall all apart. I will quickly point out with the Chargers, for a lock schedule team, their next 4 games are Ravens, at the Falcons, who looked a lot worse yesterday, yeah, but are a salty enough team they can beat you. Okay, mm-hmm. It's on the road. Chiefs, Bucks, Broncos are the next five.
Yeah, I mean, that's big, like, big games.
I mean, that's, you know, like, but it's like 7-3 just gives you such a head start.
They need three wins to guarantee it.
Yeah.
Two gives you a chance, but three guarantees it.
It's kind of hard to imagine that they would at least not get into the 7 seed, even if they were going to make things challenging for themselves.
Are you even believers, though, in the Chargers? Because, look, I understand.
To do what? Like, to do what?
To win the Super Bowl?
No.
Or to be a playoff team?
To win a playoff game. Like, do you really think they can?
Because right now, they're the 5 seed. Right this second, they would actually go to Houston. And from what I've seen from Houston, yeah, why couldn't Harbaugh's defense give C.J. Stroud some fits?
Score just as many points and let up like 100 less than Houston.
They aren't challenging Buffalo or...
Not for the Super Bowl.
Here's a challenge.
I'm just saying for an AFC title game. Like to get... Like,
They're the better version of the Houston Texans, though. Because they play better defense. They both are limited offensively, who don't have enough weapons on the case, who maybe give up too much pressure occasionally, but the Chargers play significantly better defense than Houston.
Here's the current field, and we know this is as it sits today. Chiefs would be the 1, Bills the 2, the Steelers the 3, the 4 would be the Texans, the 5 I just mentioned, the Chargers. So that's your 4-5 matchup. Right now, the Steelers would be hosting the Ravens wild card weekend if the standings stood pat.
We just watched that 18 game.
And then 7 seed Denver would go to Buffalo, which I think would be actually a really interesting close game. Buffalo, of course, would be favored, duh. But just
by about a touchdown, probably.
Yeah, maybe 6. Yeah, 6.5, probably. Yeah, exactly. The bubble teams, that's why we narrowed it down. Colts and Dolphins. Colts are 5-6. Their playoff percentage probability is 33%. The Dolphins are the 9 right now, 12%. Cincinnati, according to NFL.com, 9% chance to make the postseason. I think we know the six of the 7 teams, and we're just going to have to see how Denver, Indy, and Miami decide the final spot.
Who has the easier schedule of those three? Is it Miami?
I think some of that's baked into the probability. I mean, Miami only has 4 wins, though, so they already had their bye, right?
Yeah,
so,
they're 4-6.
Look, I mean, just watching, I think the Dolphins are a better football team than the Colts, even though the Colts have 1 more win. Don't you guys trust the Dolphins with Tua healthy more than the Colts?
Yeah.
Based on current teams' winning percentage, the easiest schedule remaining out of those teams is Indianapolis.
Okay.
They face a 381 winning percentage. Miami is right next to them. 30th hardest schedule, Indianapolis. 29th hardest schedule, Miami. Denver, the 23rd hardest
Colts
schedule.
Have the Lions coming up this Sunday, so that's definitely not the easy one. And then Patriots, Broncos, tough one. Titans, Giants, Jags. So
but it might just come down to
Lions
them playing
and Broncos.
Each other.
Yeah, the Lions Broncos is massive. And yes, that head to head, I wonder if that's even a flex eligible game. That might be.
Colts Broncos could end up that game itself.
It's 325. I don't know if that's a locked in game or not. I don't know if they would have done that. But last night's Sunday football game was entertaining. I mean, both teams tried to give the game up to the others. I mean, Cincinnati, the only part of credit I will give them, Drew, is they were down 21 points and somehow got that game tied and really should have won the game at the end. The Chargers had no answer for Burrow in the offense for a little bit. And then a couple missed field goals, of course. It's kind of the same story with Cincinnati all year. They don't finish football games.
Theme of what you said was should have won that game.
Yeah.
You could literally say that for... I mean, almost every loss they've had.
Yeah, I told you I'm not going to really, you know, I don't talk about teams that are 3 games under 500 very much. So, I'm going to take it easy. I think the record speaks for itself. I don't have to say much more.
The one thing that I will say is I was very proud of them for fighting back and playing hard because they could have easily laid down and got their ass kicked by 40 if the way that it was going.
Truthfully, you're right. But also, I think the reason why is because they knew that they were dead. They were staring down the end of their season, and they knew it. They knew by losing that game last night, our season is over. We're not making the postseason, and we can just wrap up this whole mess. So they fought. They fought like hell, and they've got enough talent got to be there. But this is the biggest, like, I get it. The stat line is going to prove pretty beneficial to old Joe Burrow by the time the season
He was
ends.
So good in that second
I
half.
Never in my life watched more people bend over backwards being like, but it's not Joe's fault.
It's not.
There's just no way. There's just no way this record could be his fault in any conceivable way. He's a superhero. This man bears no blame for any amount of losing they've done in any conceivable fashion.
Now that's not
And
true.
That's just not how football works.
No, his numbers are insane. He's actually playing. He's having the best season of his career, which is wild to say because they're going to end up winning like 6 games this season. Yeah. They're four and seven. Then you had Ja'Marr Chase after the game. I will play this. they're like on the verge of just blowing this whole thing up, aren't they?
We just got to find ways to finish.
Everybody obviously knows you. What do you do?
How do I do it? I don't know. Ask Zach. Ask the coaches. Don't ask me. That's not my job.
To finish?
I play football on the field. I don't call plays for us, you know, so I can't really do nothing.
You think that's part of the finishing factor is plays stuff?
I don't know.
Just back over, run over your coach a little bit, please. Just run over Zach Taylor.
Back in there, do it one more time.
They are ready to just, you can even see, like, they had the shot on the sideline when they were down 27-6. It is not fun. It is not fun. And there's a whole lot of blame to go around, obviously.
I feel like, though, at the end of the season, we are going to get like a t-shirt. It's like, best 6-win team in NFL history.
I will buy
Cincinnati.
That. You know what? I might get you.
They want to give him the MVP. They're 7-10. Give Joe Burrow the MVP. Best touchdown to interception ratio in the league this year.
I might get you a shirt. I might buy that for Christmas.
I'll have Ray Gunn make it for us.
The best six-win team in the league, baby.
It was a fun game. They were fighting for their damn lives. Joe Burrow. But like part
He's
of it is
throwing
like,
off Nick Bosa. It was insane.
Joe Burrow played great. When his back was against the wall, his team was getting ready to die. He's done that a lot in his NFL career. But I would also point out that he could have done something to maybe not let his team get down 27-6. Should have thrown a little more fight there early on rather than just like punting the ball back to the Chargers when they were getting carved up by Justin Herbert.
I could go to the beginning of again Zach Taylor. That's the only thing against Zach Taylor is you knew going into the game you could not kick field goals like with your defense. You settled for field goals twice.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it.
McPherson.
Go for it. Woo. I don't know what happened to Evan McPherson, man, but that was...
Kicking was at an all-time high for like 2 months in this NFL season. These last 2 weeks have been brutal for kickers.
A couple 27-yard, 26-yard field goals in a couple games yesterday.
Another block kick to end a game for Chicago. Mm-hmm.
Lastly, real quick.
Okay.
Are you ready to admit something to yourself finally?
Oh, that the season's over?
Are you?
He has to.
Are you?
He doesn't have a
I
today.
Do I There's no while technically they do while technically they do have a shot. I do not think the Bengals are going to make the playoffs.
All right.
Doesn't
that feel good to say out loud? Like,
no,
stop giving yourself
like
false hope.
Yeah, your shoulders, you know?
I don't have to stop like pretending it's over. It's done.
I'm going to be honest. For the first time in a very very long time, that loss hurt in another way last night. It hurt bad.
Well, you come all the way back. You think we're going to, here we
so
go.
So bad.
Yeah, I get that.
The only way the Bengals could do it, though.
Think about the mood change difference. They're only one game back of a wild card spot, having come back from 21 points down. Everyone would have been saying today they were making the postseason.
Yes.
And instead,
if they won that game last night, they were going to make the playoffs.
The name of the game is finding a way to win, and they only have four of them. I do love this t-shirt idea. Someone says we need to get t-shirts. Say we are the team to beat. Quoting Jamar Chase, and then have whatever Cincinnati's
record
is.
I will buy that
Get
t-shirt.
It for Drew.
I will buy.
Somebody text line says, thank you, Drew. Only took 10 painful weeks.
It only took that long, but we are here.
Oh, I just feel bad. I mean, not just
big weight off of this.
Just feel better.
No, and believe me, they're going to beat the Steelers next week, and I'm going to be right back in, and I'm going to be disappointed all over again.
All right, let's get to the trash of the day.
I am ready to be disappointed more than any other NFL fan is. 1 second. I was ranting, and I was unprepared. Here we go.
Trash of the day.
All right, you guys may have seen this story. It's been out there for a week or so. We almost had this last week, and then we're like, didn't want to have like a darker trash of the day at that day for whatever reason. I can't remember what it was, but we're like, all right, let's do this eventually.
We'll
see. This story about this missing kayaker from Wisconsin involving his family, you guys may have seen. It's been on national news. So to fill you in, maybe you haven't seen it. There's a husband and father of three who vanished at a Wisconsin lake this summer. And now they truly believe he faked his own death and fled to Eastern Europe. And the sheriff in the town is urging the man to come forward. This all started back on August 12th. They learned that this 45-year-old man had not returned home. He was last known to be at a lake. He last texted his wife the night before, said he was turning his kayak around and heading to shore. Then they searched, of course, the lake. They discover the kayak's overturned, the life jackets in the lake, and they later found like the tackle box and his fishing rod. and they use the whole sonar stuff, and then they realize, wait a second, the search continued for 54 days. They're like, this dude, not in this lake. This guy's not in the area.
54 days they searched for him.
Then they're like, this is not right. They discovered his name had been checked by law enforcement in Canada, and he had been communicating with a woman from Uzbekistan. And then they find out he took out a life insurance policy. And so this dude, it sure looks like, just flat out left his family, his wife and kids, and is in Eastern Europe. And then the latest update this weekend is that maybe someone spotted him on social media. Like, maybe somehow, like,
come on, man. If you fake your death, you can't get on social media.
I don't know. But this story, like, this is definitely a future Dateline, you know, 2020 episode or something.
People know they can just get divorced, right?
What a loser, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
To your family, your wife, to fake your death? You abandoned your kids. I mean, honestly, what a piece of, you know what?
Yeah, that's awful.
Oh, yeah. He's a trash human being. But just, like, get a divorce. There are deadbeat dads in this. You could just be a deadbeat dad. You fake your own death? That comes with a whole host
of
possible legal consequences, you know? You could have just taken whatever money you could have scraped together, got on a plane to Uzbekistan, and just never seen your family again, which is a horrible thing to do and certainly makes you an awful human being. But, like, faking your death, I'm not really sure. You didn't want to, like, them to feel bad? You want to, like, you thought they'd feel better if they thought you were dead versus just ditched them?
Probably, but, like, the life insurance thing, I get the concept, but also, like, it didn't make sense. Like, how did he think that was going
to
pay off? Because, of course, while they were investigating you missing, the insurance company is not paying out the life insurance policy. They sure as hell aren't paying it off to you. So it was, if the life insurance policy is in the name of this, the woman from Uzbekistan, she's not getting paid out until they officially have a cause of death or whatever. Mm-hmm. So how did you think, within never finding the body, you were going to get the life insurance money? It doesn't make any sense. Maybe I'm missing something.
He didn't think that through. Maybe he thought after the life insurance money came through, he would, like, pop back up, try to get it from his wife, and then run again?
But they never found...
Or get back into their bank accounts?
They found his life jacket in the lake and never found the body. So, like, it became very clear that he didn't drown. So... you're not collecting the life insurance policy.
Maybe he thought they would just be like, life jacket was enough to, you know, think he drove.
I don't think that's how this works.
Well, I don't think so either. I'm just saying, like, you know,
he
maybe that's
just
what he was
assumed
going
that
for.
He was dead.
Yeah, I don't think this. Well, his kayak's overturned. Oh, well, we don't need to find
him. I mean, do they always have to find the body to determine that you're dead?
No, but actually,
like, that's find my life jacket. It's not crazy.
I think out of respect to, like, the family,
no,
they would want it to
but
be confirmed.
If you are believed to be missing at the lake and they found your kayak, the reasonable assumption would be that you're dead at the bottom of the lake, and they did the whole sonar stuff, and there was no body.
54 to 50. They searched for that man in the lake. Should have chosen a bigger lake. They would have never just given up if it was Michigan. You know? They'd have been like, too big. Can't be searching this whole lake. That's crazy. He's probably just
Ozarks,
dead.
Ozarks, you're just like, oh, you're good?
Yeah, too big. Too big. You can't just be choosing the family pond. Jeez. They can search that thing. Too small. People never thinking through their crimes, you know?
Of all the things you're now suggesting... You're giving advice for this?
Someone says, I don't fish in my kayak with my life jacket on. Just depends on probably your level of comfort in the water, you know?
There you go. That's the trash of the day. Up next, the Chiefs made a decision before the game even started yesterday that I think tells us a whole lot about how they feel in a certain area. And reminder, Andy Reid speaking exclusively here on 96.5 The Fan at noon.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Coming up in 25 minutes, Andy Reid right here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for the Chiefs. The only place on a Monday you can hear from Coach Reid. Definitely want to get his perspective a little bit more post-film on how they handled that fourth down play against Josh Allen and overall what he saw from the left tackle spot yet again. And that's where we start the Chiefs Red Half Hour, because before the game even started, it was quite the tell. It's what we've already all known from the outside, but, like, the organization publicly admitted they're on this, they're with you, which is Kingsley Suamataia was inactive.
A healthy scratch.
Healthy scratch. And no injury, just a healthy inactive, which meant Driscoll was the number two, we presume, the number two left tackle.
I think it might
in that
have been Toomey's
could
the number
have
two left tackle,
yeah,
based on Nate Taylor's
observations. But Driscoll was up.
Yep.
With the team on an active roster, I should say, on game day. If they don't even trust him to be active, I don't blame him, by the way, but if they don't, they almost have to sign Donovan Smith. Like, what? I really would. I know we had Nate Taylor on, and he's like, hey, if Wanya Morris shows that he's healthy, maybe they won't do it. Depends on how he plays on Sunday and all that. I don't know, unless there's like some weird thing with Donovan Smith we don't know about. Unless Donovan Smith refuses to be a backup. I don't, these are all speculative things. I have no idea. I don't believe either is true, by the way. But it makes no sense. You just told us that you don't even trust him to be your backup, and you shouldn't, which is fine
now
at this point.
Now you're going to go to Driscoll?
You can't.
An undrafted
rookie?
Not for
a team that you know is going to be in the playoffs. If Wanya Morris goes down, and also he didn't play well yesterday, but if Wanya Morris goes down, you're going to go to Driscoll, or you're going to move Tooney to left tackle, and then your left guard spot's even weaker. Your whole O-line becomes weaker. It's a mess. Donovan Smith has to be signed. Dude, it needs, honestly, get it done this week. Get it done this week. He doesn't have to play, obviously, against Carolina. Get him in the facility. Get him up to speed. Football shape. Will he go on the practice squad? Don't tell me you can't financially move stuff around to make this happen. It's already week 13 or week 12.
Dude, make anything a signing bonus. Look, I hate to be a downer here, and I know people don't like to write off people's careers early. You better be really concerned that an undrafted free agent rookie is an active player on game day over your second round pick. That should be deeply, deeply, deeply concerning to you for the long-term health of left tackle in this organization. And they're probably right back to number one need in the 2025 NFL draft is tackle.
I didn't even have to make a trade.
Without maybe.
Orlando Brown-esque
it is
trade.
It is the number one need in the offseason, because here's the problem. If you ask me right now, hey, Cody, tell me the single biggest problem with the Chiefs offense. Is it Mahomes making mistakes and throwing picks? Is it the lack of wide receiver talent? Is it the what? It is tackle. And it's, yep, honest to God, it's the number one problem, and I think we all know it. And I don't think it's a mystery to the Chiefs. He, on his very first three dropbacks in that game yesterday, Mahomes got hit three times. He got intercepted, it got deflected, and he got sacked. He was pressured, according to NextGen, 37% of his dropbacks. He only completed five passes during those attempts and threw a pick. Now, he did throw two touchdowns against those pressures, so that probably speaks to Mahomes a little bit. He cannot stand back there and be pressured on 40% of his snaps. This is an unacceptable number. We're getting to the point that Donovan Smith is not just a good safety net to Wanya Morris in case he's hurt. He might actually be the better person to start at left tackle. That's the level of play we're getting out of the offensive line.
But that's why they got to sign him now, though, Cody, because you have to build him up. Like, if Donovan Smith signs, in 3 weeks, then you're worrying about getting him ready for the playoffs. To me, you sign him, if he's willing to sign to the practice squad, you bring him up for that reason.
And then you
get him in football shape, get him acclimated again. You continue to see how Wanya performs. And by playoff time, you either are not starting Wanya or you are, but you have a legit backup that you know can get the job done. You're not even having Kingsley active anymore. I mean, that to me was the sign. Like, if you're not even willing to have him active anymore, you've already told me you agree that you need to bring somebody else.
Too.
Yeah, and we've talked about it. The left tackle is definitely an off-season conversation again, and what is Kingsley and all that. But right now in the present, in the 2024 season, Wanya Morris has no depth behind him. He obviously at times is a liability himself. The only option out there, the only option out there is signing Donovan Smith. Unless he is flat out unwilling
to come and play for this team,
to be on the practice squad for a couple weeks or
he's
whatever,
just fried. Yeah, they take him in for a work and you're like,
but his social media would say otherwise publicly. At least Nate Taylor joined us last week and acted like, he believes that Donovan Smith would be one, is ready to go essentially. So I would ask the question, what's the holdup if it doesn't happen this week?
Well, and honestly, is it even that bad of a thing to say, hey, we're going to bring you in as the starter, and to say you're going to be the starter?
Or you're competing to be the starter?
Because if that's what he wants, then maybe you just say, you know what, we're just going to give it to you.
I can't believe I'm this far down. I would at least in practice entertain Tooney at left tackle. I'm not saying I do that, but I'd kick the tires in practice at this point.
Yeah.
He got pressure on 40% of his snaps. Everybody knows tackle. And look, some of this is Mahomes is still making bad throws. Like the one to the Xavier Worthy when he missed him. There's a little bit of pressure there, but like he threw it off his back foot when he didn't need to. He could have just set his feet and launched that ball down the field. He threw it off his back foot because there has been consistent pressure on him. And sometimes because of that, your footwork gets out of whack and you get happy feet. And I do think that that has certainly been part of Mahomes' problem this year, is he has not adjusted well to the increased amount of pressure given there. But that's why it's still the single biggest issue on this team. And yeah, you're right. If Donovan Smith will pick up a phone call from you today, I don't know why you wouldn't do it. Kingsley, man, I'll ask a serious question because, yes, it is more of an offseason conversation about what they do about it. Does Kingsley Suamataia ever start another game at left tackle for this team?
No. I don't know how you can say yes.
I also think it's no. Start an offensive line, I think you can make your arguments, right? People move the to guard all the time. Move to right tackle, but Juwan's there.
Yeah, I mean, right tackle. Juwan Taylor is already locked. You know, you based on the contract mechanism that was out there in March, I believe it became guaranteed already. Like, Juwan Taylor's not going anywhere next year. He will be on this football team unless somebody's going to trade for him. I don't see why that would happen. So Juwan Taylor is playing right tackle for you next year. The left tackle situation, to me, feels like, I know you said draft. That in the offseason feels like another Orlando Brown situation. If you recall, that was, hey, guy was on a rookie deal, but he was about to get paid, but both sides agreed that he would play out the final year, and then you worry about either signing him or you eat it for a year or whatever, right? And that seems like where it's going. I don't think where the Chiefs draft 28-32 just about every single year. I don't believe you're finding a starting left tackle. I just don't. They thought they found one, obviously, in the second round in Kingsley, and he was projected to be a first round pick too. So this isn't like some like way outlandish pick at the time based on projections.
It's a lot harder to get right.
He somehow won the job in camp.
That's always the confusing part.
Won the job in camp.
So I think if Nate, I think he mentioned this, and Mac and I played this cut on After Hours when he was talking about Wanye and him just needing to be serviceable. I think he referenced in training camp, Wanye was just looking to get back and be ready for the season. More than it was like
win the job.
More than it was win the job. Yeah. So Kingsley was almost the guy who was always just getting the reps anyway. So they maybe just figured, you know what, Kingsley's getting the reps. He looks pretty solid in preseason. We're just going to give it to him and see what happens. That's the only conceivable reason.
It is never a good sign when a top 2-round pick is a healthy and active in his rookie season, and it's not week one.
Especially after he was already a starter,
and it's not in week one. It's November. There's supposed to be progression. And this is not meant to be a huge shot on Wanye Morris because he obviously at times has played well enough to help them win some games. But it's not like you got some great guy that won the job over you. I mean, like, Wanye Morris isn't some like amazing
Trent
left
Williams
tackle.
Didn't like beat you out for the job.
No. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about Wanye Morris, a mid-round draft pick that played 4 games last year and only played 4 when Donovan Smith got hurt. And Donovan Smith, who they didn't want to bring back this year.
So where does that even put in terms
they
of...
They gave Donovan Smith the job right back.
In terms of future plans, I know that it's, you know, we want to stay current, but just thinking, just looking ahead real quick. Where does that put Kingsley even in the depth? So let's say they make a trade, they sign a free agent, whatever it is, they don't draft anybody.
He's a backup tackle, swing tackle.
But Wanye is your backup tackle then, and your swing tackle at that point. He's in the last year
of his deal.
I mean, is Kingsley, do you keep Wanye again as the swing tackle? And then you just say, you know what?
This is why a trade to me has to happen.
Kingsley's a bust. Because if you make a trade, you have that left tackle, Wanye would be your swing tackle. Do you just... you just give up on Kingsley and say, you know what, that was the worst pick the Chiefs ever made, or what?
They're not just going to cut a second round. It's one thing to cut like a fifth round pick. Yeah, they'll just have him. Hell, if everybody agrees in the league, he's not good. You know, he's a guy that's a practice squad candidate in the future. There's so many different avenues. Remember, he's on a rookie deal. Hell, even Wanye Morris still has 2 more years of control after this. I say control. It's not baseball, but you get my point.
Yeah.
He's under contract for 2 more years where he's making no money. So I know he's still only 24 years old. So no, both of them went. I think if you're asking, like, are they on the team next year? Yeah, I think both will be on the team next year.
I'll be honest. I've never seen a team move on from a second round pick at tackle without trying him at guard first. Like, I'm not kidding. Every team does it. They're like, well, this is just not working at tackle, and I don't get it. Can you play guard? Hello, Trey Smith is in the last year of his deal, and he's going to cost us an incredible amount of money to bring back. Have you thought about guard? Is something
they need to
that
start
will...
testing that sooner rather than later, though.
I know. I still think they'll give Trey Smith a contract at this point because I don't think that can risk that. But we'll see.
Yeah, Kingsley. His is this his? Yeah, it looks like this is his Twitter account or whatever. He he sent out a tweet yesterday. It would have been at midnight, so he probably learned right before. So this would have been Saturday. Clock turns midnight. It's now Sunday at 12:34. It was just like the sad emoji, basically. I don't know. Now, was that about BYU losing to Kansas?
Oh yeah, tough call.
Or was that about learning he was going to be inactive? I think that's BYU.
I think it is too.
I think that's KU beating BYU.
I see the text line saying, hey, you guys.
Someone pointed out that tweet. I think that's related to the BYU game more than it is the inactive.
Somebody said, hey, you guys gave up on.
Whoa. Only one of us on the show gave up on FAU. Thank you very much.
You gave up on Felix and UDK Uzama last year as well. Okay, let me just point something out real quick. Felix and UDK Uzama is still a below average NFL player. Does that hurt your feelings? Like, I've got bad news for you. He is still a below average NFL player. Gold, would you like to take a guess at how many snaps Felix got on the field yesterday? 12 is the correct answer. He got 12 the week before that. He was coming off of three straight games in the 30s, and they've switched him to a 21% and 16% time player. On the season, he's played roughly 30% of the snaps. It's a backup player. He's fine. There's nothing wrong with a rotational defensive end who is, I think, really good in run stops. He's not a good pass rusher, but really good in run stops and a situational defensive lineman. If I had told you that he was a situational defensive lineman who played 30% of the snaps, I don't think you'd be clamoring for a first-round pick. This is value versus, and eventually I'll change I won't have the, we talked about Clyde on Friday. I won't have the what they were picked versus what they are. If you just accept what Felix Anudike is as an NFL player, I'm actually kind of fine with his production. He is a rotational defensive lineman who does a pretty good job at that. If I think of him as a first-round pick, doesn't hold water anymore. I'm not giving up on Felix's career now. I think he'll probably maintain.
He's 22 years old.
I think he'll probably continue to be a nice NFL player. And look, Turk Wharton developed in years 3 and 4.
So, I mean, Felix is one of the youngest players on. He's one of the youngest players on the roster still.
Yeah, and Kingsley's a very young player. I wouldn't give up on him. I'm just saying, like, I don't think he starts another game at left tackle for the Chiefs.
Yeah, it's way more concerning, honestly, the Kingsley problem, because we're talking about a left tackle position. I know an edge rusher is very important, but they at least for the time being, they still have Chris Jones playing at a high level. They obviously have Carl Loftus under contract for another year or two. Like, the more concerning is they don't have any bit of long-term left tackle stability. And it's not like your right tackle's playing amazing football either.
Expensive. Jawan
Taylor's kind of been like, the heat on him's been, one, he hasn't been awful, but also because of how bad the left tackle situation is, he's kind of been able to slide by a little bit.
He's getting away with it a little bit for sure. I don't disagree.
Coming up in 15 minutes, we're going to hear from Andy Reid. But getting back to yesterday, I think yesterday showed us why, when I said a week ago, when Drew was asking us about, like, hey, are you more, you sure you wouldn't rather play Josh Allen instead of Lamar, or Burrow instead of Lamar, et cetera, with this whole conversation. Yesterday, to me, is why the Bills are the biggest threat. Not just because they won the football game. No. I understand the regular season versus postseason success each team has had against each other. But whether it is Josh Allen on that 4th and 2 and his ability to make plays with his legs as well in a physical manner, or I think more importantly, Sean McDermott has been hurt by Andy Reid and the Chiefs enough that he actually has wised up to his credit, and the aggressive calls, he knows he cannot give Mahomes the football back in that scenario. And so he's willing to risk the consequences of a 4th and 2 stop there instead of the field goal. A field goal does nothing there for the Bills. They're up 4 at that point, and Mahomes has 2 minutes to work. And oh yeah, the Chiefs offense just had a great drive too prior to that. And so he's, in the past, made that decision to kick a field goal. I think Harbaugh might make that decision still with the Ravens. I think that D'Amico Ryan, because he hasn't been burned by the Chiefs yet, still might do that. But when you've been hurt as much as Sean McDermott has by Patrick Mahomes, he knows better. And that's what makes them more dangerous.
They have, so like a lot of this is just, they're getting shots at the title, you know? So I know Drew or others will point out, the one time Patrick Mahomes has lost in the postseason, essentially, to an active NFL quarterback, is the one game against Joe Burrow years ago.
Yeah, it's a fact.
Joe Burrow is getting ready to finish his 5th year in the NFL. His team's going to miss the playoffs again this year, which means in 5 full calendar years, Joe Burrow would have gotten Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs once. I get it. That trumps the 0 times Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen have gotten Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs. But man, I have watched more than I'd like to admit Josh Allen go toe to damn toe with Patrick Mahomes in regular season and postseason games, more importantly. Those two teams have faced each other a lot in the postseason. It's always been the Bills. This is one of those conversations that I think you kick around because it's been a little too long since you watch them play each other for a minute, or you just forget for a brief moment, or they go through this. These have always been the two best teams in the AFC for five consecutive years. The one difference is that Josh Allen has been incapable of getting past Patrick Mahomes, and he's had some cracks at it. But he's also 4-4 in his career, and I do weigh postseason games more valuable, but not one postseason game versus eight times of watching these two teams go back and forth. These teams have been almost equal, except for Patrick Mahomes is more clutch in the postseason game than Josh Allen. But yeah, I still fear them more than any other team in the AFC. Way more than the Texans or any of these other teams below those. But definitely more than Lamar Jackson, who's having an MVP-type season himself.
He is, but look at Baltimore. I mean, 3 weeks ago, there were plenty of national pundits say, oh, this Ravens team with a healthy Derrick Henry and Lamar, just unbeatable. They've lost, two out of their last four? Something along those lines. Baltimore just lost, as you said, head-to-head to the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday. We'll see what the Ravens look like the next couple weeks because they're going to be tested. The Ravens play at the Chargers, and they host the Eagles. So the Ravens will have a chance to solidify themselves again. But, you know, they had the 1-point win against Cincinnati, and then they just lost to the Steelers. Like, the last 2 weeks, they have not looked like, and of course they have the Browns loss mixed in, they have not looked like this unbeatable force. No. And now you'll see the national narrative will, of course, pivot towards Buffalo, and I get it.
And it's fine. It can. Or the Lions, right, who, even though they don't
Lions, for the first time all year, Super Bowl favorites, officially at sportsbooks, FanDuel, etc.
Every single sportsbook.
Every book.
Yeah.
Yep. The Lions are slight favorites to win the Super Bowl. It's the first time all year.
I mean, that
shouldn't bug you, by the way. That's the way this works, and it makes a whole lot of sense.
The Bills, as of yesterday, at some point, even after the win, were still behind the Ravens.
They are.
To win the Super Bowl. That doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry. What world are we living in? The Bills, who only have two losses, both to winning teams, by the way, Baltimore and Houston. And I say they lost to Baltimore.
That's probably
but
why.
But this is the transitive property stuff. Like the Cleveland Browns shouldn't be a better Super Bowl favorite than the Ravens just because they beat them. I hate that circular logic that is one single regular season game determining who is the better team. This is the case you and I talked about all the time. We watch the Bills. We understand where they match up or a problem. And you know what the biggest thing is? More than any other part of the field, more than any other little thing we can nitpick or McDermott understanding or all the things we can point out what the Bills' problem is, the Josh Allen is the closest thing there is in the league to Patrick Mahomes. He's not Patrick Mahomes, but he's the closest damn thing. And that's why they're the biggest danger. He is as close as they get to being Patrick Mahomes. He's like just a little off. And I still think it's like Mahomes 1-1, not 1A, not 1B, 1. There's Allen 2, then give me a gap, and then get me 3 through the rest.
There's something to be said for the mobility and physical nature for Josh Allen. Like, obviously, Lamar Jackson is the best runner I think we've ever seen. I understand Michael Vick exists as well, but I think Lamar Jackson's the best runner we've ever seen in the NFL at the quarterback spot, and I don't think it's close. He also has improved as a passer. He's already got two MVPs under his belt, and he's in contention for a third, although I think this is the year Josh Allen, especially with the win yesterday, ends up actually getting his first MVP award. But playing Buffalo on a 4th-and-2, who scares you more? 4th-and-2, Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen? The answer is Josh Allen because of just he's able, due to his size, to just go QB power and get you. Lamar obviously can do plenty of amazing things. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day as well. Both these guys are. Heck, all three of the guys we're talking about, Burrow included. But there's something to be said of like the running ability on a we just saw the walk-off touchdown essentially for Josh Allen on the 4th-and-2. Like, that's a play that, to me, I'm only seeing from Josh Allen and maybe Lamar Jackson. That's it.
Josh Allen just possesses skills most people don't possess. That 4th-and-2 run's just an example of it, but I mean, still, it's just ridiculous what he's capable of.
It's not necessarily the best play of the year, but that's going to be the one where they'll play it if he wins MVP. That's the one that they'll just have kind of on a loop.
Yeah, probably.
Up next, we're going to hear from Andy Reid. The only place on a Monday after a Chiefs game you can hear from head coach Andy Reid is your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. I'm sure we'll be asked about the left tackle situation and asked about what he saw from that defense down the stretch.